On the Clock. I'm your host, Brett Whitefield. This is PFF Brad Spielberger. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Brad. How are you?
Doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing good. For those listening, you can find Brad at PFF underscore Brad on Twitter or X. He is a R&D analyst, salary cap analyst at PFF. He's the man. He's got to be the best salary cap guy in the business. I think it's probably easy to figure out really quickly that anytime financial stuff and NFL is being talked about, no one really knows what the heck they're talking about except for Brad. So that's pretty obvious here. So we really appreciate everything you do for the industry, Brad, because I think you bring a lot of clarity. So
I appreciate that. Very, very, very kind of you. I don't know if I deserve all those accolades and honors, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. Now you are formerly of Over the Cap, or are you still there?
Yeah, I still help out over there. So, and those are the true gurus, the true goats, Jason Fitzgerald and those guys over there. But yeah, I still we'll be uploading contracts next week at the fastest possible speed we can.
Awesome. Yeah. If you're a content creator also who does a lot of mock drafts and you're trying to figure out how to perform your trade back scenario, the Fitzgerald Spielberger chart has got to be my favorite because it's based in reality. You know, like I think a lot of the other charts, you know, really kind of cheapen draft picks. And I usually try to use a blend of the two because the reality is most NFL teams are still using the old outdated one. But, I always get, comments on my trades that, hey, so-and-so team should get way more back in draft cap. I'm like, yeah, but not according to the actual chart that matters. But
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I will say, you are correct. Jimmy Johnson still controls the marketplace. We are seeing, though, there have been some trades in recent years that are starting to kind of come towards the middle a little bit, which has been cool. I'm not saying there's anything to do with me, but it has been cool to see.
Yeah, Vikings are one of the teams, right, that have kind of been a little more valuing all draft picks rather than just the ones at the top of the draft. So, all right, well, let's jump in. It is free agency week, kind of. We just wrapped up the franchise tag deadline day yesterday. No real surprises there, right? Like it was pretty much across the board. Unfortunately, a lot of outlets wrote their free agency articles 6 weeks ago and had to, retract a lot because the top of the market got scooped up by franchise tag pretty much. But was there any surprises for you as far as the tags go?
Yeah, no, not yesterday. Obviously, I guess we got news. I would say in the entire process, I am a bit surprised. You know, Miami is in a bad cap situation, so I'm not shocked they decided they didn't want to put a, 22 or whatever it was, $1 million tag down on Christian Wilkins, but I am surprised that it got to that point. I think he's going to get a massive contract, probably above Quinnen Williams now in free agency, just because of the bidding war it's about to ensue. So that one was a bit surprising. And L'Jarius Sneed to a degree as well. Yes, he's awesome. I get it. I think their calculation was more, we'd rather get more compensation in return than just a compensatory pick, because once they knew Jalen Johnson was not going anywhere, Sneed was by far the best corner available. Like, I like Kendall Fuller a lot. Kendall Fuller is not the number one corner on my free agent board. Good player, but, about to be 30, third contract guy. That's the number one corner in a class. It doesn't bode well for the overall group, in either position.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get into those guys specifically too. But I wanted to hit the very top of this free agent class because there are some names that could really actually impact the top of the draft. I know everyone's talking Russ Wilson this morning. We'll get into him in a second. But Chris Jones, is there any chance this guy's not a Kansas City Chief at the end of the day?
So that ties into the Sneed thing a little bit. My takeaway from the Sneed tag was also that the two sides felt very good about where they're at, the two sides being Chris Jones and the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know. I mean, Mike Garofolo was on NFL Network yesterday, suggesting at the Raiders making a big push for Chris Jones. And look, I think every team, if they have the opportunity to get him on the phone, is going to try. I don't know. I don't see how Kansas City would make that tag decision, go the way they're going, if they didn't feel very confident with where they were. So I'm not going to say no chance, but if I had to bet, I would say that Chris Jones is a Kansas City Chief, going forward.
Right on. When it comes to free agency, how I think this is a common misconception among fans, but teams really plan this stuff out ahead of time, right? Like there's no just, on a whim, we're just going to go sign a Danielle Hunter this year, even though we didn't plan for that all, right? They have pretty much every dollar kind of earmarked in sort of a way, right?
To a degree, yes. So you have a cash budget. So everyone talks about the cap, which I get. But really, the ownership gives the front office a cash budget and says, all right, fit your players you want to add within this construct. And look, maybe they have some conversations and towards the end of the season with agents and whatnot, not to tamper, more just to get a gauge of would this guy even be interested in coming to the city, or is he a fit in our system, whatever. And then they shrink down their list. Like, I won't say teams or anything like that, but I've talked to some teams that say, like, we get a board, and obviously, again, the front office, like the pro scouts might watch 300 players, but some football administration departments, for example, the cap guys, hey, we get a board of 50 names. Give us your projection, your thoughts, whatever, on this list. And it's kind of a more, you know, very specific guys they think they view as targets, etc. So, yeah, I don't think you get any, like, crazy random moves. But, yeah, maybe a guy, I don't know, you find out late in the process that he wants to move to a certain city or whatever. There's always the human element and dynamics, too. But yeah, long answer short, I think it's usually fairly – they're fairly confident who their targets are going to be well before, you know, March rolls around.
Right on. All right. So a guy that is going to be talked about a ton next week is Kirk Cousins, coming from Minnesota. He is a free agent. I know the hot rumors are Atlanta, but this is one that could really affect the top of the draft, because if one of those QB needy teams lands Kirk Cousins and then Minnesota becomes a QB needy team, there's a lot of shuffling that could take place. What do you see with Kirk? Do you think there's a chance he's a Viking still? Do you think he moves on? Is Atlanta even a good fit for him, from in your opinion? What do you see there?
Yeah, so I think he is, like, it's still possible he goes back to Minnesota, and my bet there would be Kevin O'Connell, I think, is pushing harder for him to stay than maybe others, and obviously, you know, the head coach, who's done well with him thus far, cares less about how much we have to pay, just get it done type of thing. I think the front office is probably more so, yeah, we like Kirk, but there's a price we probably don't want to exceed, and there might be some more desperate teams across the NFL that are willing to pay more, and so I do think Atlanta is the team to watch. We've heard all the, you know, it's now been reported. His wife's from there. They had their wedding there, like all those dynamics. But if I'm Kirk, he's mentioned he likes playing in domes, so check that box. It's probably the worst division in the NFL, so that's nice. You have a good offensive line. You have good young pass catchers. You should have a good run game now with a good 1-2 punch of Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier. The defense got better last year, yada, yada, yada. So it lines up well. And then, of course, last but certainly not least, the pairing with Zach Robinson, you know, the offensive coordinator, I think it is a good fit. They're going to run a lot of play action, throw over the middle of the field, you know, roll them out and boot stuff like that. We'll see how the Achilles looks. But, like, I think it just a lot of it makes sense. And Robinson's also adaptable. The Rams, the offense this year was very different than years past. But the bread and butter we kind of assume he's used to is a fit with Kirk Cousins. So the last thing I'll say, if he does leave, and if Minnesota knows he's leaving, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, they're trying to strike a trade up in the draft, like, right now. Like, if they are sitting here today and saying, all right, Kirk is gone in a week, they're probably calling New England at 3, Arizona at 4, you know, the Chargers at 5, because, you know, people will try to map whatever. Oh, they'll go after Baker Mayfield. I think they would just try to trade up and get a prospect.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. It's also worth noting, Cousins, you know, the pairing with Zach Robinson is good. He's kind of played in that offense or a variation of it his entire career, almost going back, you know, obviously his time in Washington, even Stefanski when he was there kind of ran a very similar system to what McVay does. I mean, that's offense is kind of, you know, made for guys like Kirk. So I think that would be a good pairing. Russell Wilson, another quarterback, obviously that's going to be on the market. I don't think he's officially on the market, but basically is. We've heard some rumors about the Patriots possibly being a landing spot. That's another one of these QB needy teams that could really kind of shape the front of the draft. It might also not shape, like, I could see the Patriots signing him and still drafting a guy. That would be a pretty reasonable route to take when you're that desperate for a quarterback. What do you see with Russ? What is his outlook right now?
Yeah, so he's going to be fascinating, because it all circles back to the Broncos owe him $39 million, so anything he earns elsewhere this year will be offset against that number, and no one is paying him more than that in 2024 cash. So I think there are going to be a bunch of teams that sit there and say, look, if we can get Russ to sign for like 1 year, $5 million, or maybe, you know, 2 years and the second year, there's optionality there. But really the crux of it is it's a cheap year in the first year, and we go from there, then I think he's going to have a market. There is the complication of, like, I think Russ will struggle to be in a QB battle or even be a backup. Like, it's just not how he's built, not how his mindset works. But, you know, like the Pittsburghs of the world, like maybe, the, you know, you mentioned the Patriots, I think are interesting if they don't fall in love with the third prospect and maybe they trade down or they, you know, just take Marvin Harrison Jr. or whatever and then go the veteran route. I think he could have a stronger market than people think, just because he could be super, super cheap. And look, he hasn't been good the last couple of years. His game and his style of play is not matching up well with how defenses are trending. But for 1 year, $5 million, it's a better option than plenty of others.
For sure. There is still part of me. I know he's been terrible the last few years, but there's a non-zero chance he's not completely cooked, right? Like, it's probably close to 0% chance that he's got anything left, but I don't know. It's not at least zero. I think there's a chance you could get something out of him, get some value there. Christian Wilkins, we mentioned him earlier. This dude, I mean, he's awesome. The thing that's really puzzling to me, Brad, is his entire draft class was loaded at D tackle. All of them got paid. And then he didn't. And that seems like a really, really bad decision by a Miami Spartan hindsight. Like, because he just got a lot more expensive. If they do want to try to keep him, obviously they couldn't get a deal done. They didn't tag him. So he's probably moving on. But man, this is another guy. It's like, it's rare for free agents of that level to be available. What do you see with Christian Wilkins here?
Yeah, so he and Josh Allen, the edge rusher, were the two guys last year where teams probably should have been looking more at the underlying metrics with the pass rush stuff and not just the sack numbers, which for neither guy were strong. And Allen's was different. Like, Josh Allen not getting extended last offseason, I think it was the biggest blunder any team made. But Wilkins, yeah, like, it's tough. And Miami paid Zach Sealer. They obviously, you know, traded for and paid Bradley Chubb. Like, you know, so the defensive line has pieces, but he's a massive, massive element and component of that against the run. And last year really took off as a pass rusher. I think you're talking about him topping all those guys. You know, I think he's going to get more than Quinnen Williams got last year. Like, my projection right now for him is 4 years, 100, because you hit the open market and get the bidders out there. And obviously, you know, it's a healthy financial environment now, you know, like Arizona and New England, we just talked about, I think will be in the mix. And there's a lot of teams also that need help on the interior. Like, I don't know, maybe Chicago jumps in the mix. It might be a bit too rich for them, but there's a lot of teams. Minnesota, I think, could get in the mix there. And he has the connection to Brian Flores too. So, yeah, I think Miami, look, they've been aggressive. They've obviously traded for Tyreek Hill and Bradley Chubb. They've signed some big-name players, traded for Jalen Ramsey. They've had, I think, 4 draft picks the last 2 years in a row or something like that. Maybe like 4 1 year, 5 the other, none of which were in the first round. It gets tough. And then you probably got to pay Tua. You got to get prepared to pay some more players. So, you know, they missed the window there to extend him last offseason. And for all we know, they had a great offer and he just didn't take it. But yeah, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow. I assume someone else pays him more than Miami's willing to.
And then we talked about L'Jarius Sneed, Kansas City's corner. I think he's still one of the most underrated players in the league. Is there, you know, it doesn't seem like they're going to keep him. It seems like they're pretty content on trading him. What are some potential landing spots for him? Also, have you heard this report about his knee?
So
it's not really verified by anybody. That's,
you know, I know, and it's gone around a couple places now. I firsthand have not heard it. I've seen it. I know what you're referring to, but you know, I don't want to talk about an injury that I've heard nothing about personally. Sure. And like, he doesn't miss time, so if even is an issue, you know, my concern more with him was not concern, but just like, he's 27, which is old for a guy coming off his rookie deal. I heard Atlanta was one potential landing spot. I did hear that secondhand, but you know, outside of AJ Terrell, they do need a lot of help with defensive back, so it makes plenty of sense to me. I think there will be a bunch of suitors. I think the way Kansas City looked at it was, let's just get a second round pick for him as opposed to waiting on a potential third round compensatory pick because someone will give it to us. Because yeah, the free agent class is just not strong. I'm a huge fan of his as well, no question about it. I love the inside outside versatility. He's physical. I know he got a penalty in the Super Bowl, but all year my favorite thing was, like, he was goading receivers into penalties all year long and never taking any himself. You had like Jamar Chase and Zay Flowers, like all these dudes that would lose their cool and shove him, and he would just kind of stand there and walk away. I think he did take one in the Super Bowl though. But anyway, so yeah, awesome player. I think wherever he does land, he'll get, I don't know, 18, 19 million a year. I don't think he's going to top the market, but yeah, I agree with you. He still probably could deserve more acclaim across the NFL.
I know the Lions listener base here, the Lions fan listener base, they're really hoping Sneed is a Lion next year. Any chance you see that happening, or are the Lions just too conservative with their, you know, with their kind of their payroll, and especially considering what they're staring down the barrel of right now with Goff and Panay and Amon-Ra?
Yeah, it might be a bit rich. I do think we are going to see Detroit spend more this offseason than we're used to the last couple of years, where I think they were trying to, you know, draft and develop, get rid of some bigger, older contracts, and just get younger, get cheaper, find like the foundational pieces like your Penei Sewells, your Aiden Hutchinsons, whatever, through the draft, Aleem McNeil, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I do think now they are going to spend. I think we're going to see some moves there. And secondary obviously makes a lot of sense, corner in particular. I just don't know about like trading a second round pick and paying for L'Jarius Sneed. So that's probably not what fans want to hear. But I do think they are, I would say, defensive line in free agency. I would probably keep an eye on them. And I think they could make a move there. And then probably another more Cameron Sutton type move, not a, you know, L'Jarius Sneed type move.
That's going to frustrate Lions fans because they want CB1. They want a guy that you can count on to eliminate somebody. I don't think the NFL is that easy, though. You mentioned D-line. Any potential fits there for the Lions? I know a lot of fans have also thrown out Jonathan Grenard as a guy they would like to see the Lions go after. Anyone on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, Grenard is definitely probably the top guy I would mention. I think he's a fit there. He's long arms. He's 265 pounds. Very, very good against the run. They obviously were phenomenal against the run last year. So I think he would make some sense, no question about it. I could see some interior pass rush too. Like, edge rusher makes sense for sure. Someone opposite of Aiden Hutchinson, but maybe they're bullish on, James Houston coming back next year, and they're looking more into the, again, not the Christian Wilkins type players, but that kind of next tier of interior rusher, like a Sheldon Rankins, who has a connection to this coaching staff from shared time with the New Orleans Saints, would make some sense to me. Maybe you take a flyer on a Tyre Tart and kind of had a weird year last year. Very, very talented football player, but obviously kind of forced his way off of the Tennessee Titans. And then lastly, maybe kind of more of a veteran, movable chess piece passer type in Daquan Jones, who had a good year last year with Buffalo. Like, I think that type of market more so. But yeah, I mean, edge rushers too. I don't see why, Grenard and there's a ton of names there. Why those guys wouldn't be targets to some degree. I just, my read is maybe they lean more towards the interior, someone to pair with Aleem McNeil. There's a ton of names at edge rusher. Grenard, the big one, no question about it. Dorrance Armstrong in Dallas has been good for the last couple of years. Smaller names, lower names like an AJ Epenesa out of Buffalo. I thought had a very good season last year. Like, I think they do something along the defensive line.
Nice. Tart's an interesting name because his D-line coach from Tennessee is now in Detroit as Detroit's D-line coach. So that is an interesting name for sure. Okay. All right, let's pivot a little bit here. So last year I had you on the podcast. We got into this really cool discussion about positional value, surplus value. The Lions that we were just talking about, my team, they ended up going out and drafting Jahmyr Gibbs and Jack Campbell in the first round, which was killer for me. On that note, I want to rehash this conversation. So gun to your head, was Jahmyr Gibbs, as well as he played, was he a good pick for the Lions last year?
I mean, look, I'll say this, like, tying into the larger conversation of positional value and all of that, if you are going to do it, the guy better be able to catch the football, which he certainly can do, and the guy better have breakaway speed to actually turn a 10-15 yard gain into a 60 yard touchdown. And so he checks both of those boxes. Obviously, you want to see more. I think they don't need to see more from him as a pass protector to get him more on the field in all those situations. I would have liked to see more 21 personnel, frankly, and get both of those guys in the field together. But anyway, so look, I can't say yes to that question. It's not. But if you are going to do it, they need to have a skill set that looks exactly like what Jahmyr Gibbs' skill set is. So, he falls in the bucket of, like, if you have to do it, if you're going to do it, he better play just like how Jahmyr Gibbs plays.
Over the weekend during Combine, Daniel Jeremiah alluded to the fact that Brock Bowers, as clean of a prospect as he is, he might not be that top 10 lock that people have thought. I've been on this train for a while, but and it comes back to surplus value, because if you draft him in the top 10, he's going to instantly be one of the highest paid tight ends in the NFL. What do you think about that? Do you think that should prevent teams from looking at Brock Bowers with a high draft pick? Is he more of a 20s type of pick because of that, or what?
Yeah, I agree. I think he'll fall out to the top 10. Also just because, like, I think there's just too many good quarterbacks, receivers, and tackles. Like, so you mentioned the surplus value, the positional value, but also, look, I think he'll be a great player in the NFL, but he is a little bit undersized. I think he might be the best college tight end we've ever seen. I think, like, you could make that argument. So I'm not trying to, like, denigrate what we saw from Brock Bowers at Georgia in college, but yeah, like, there are some question marks there. Just how the game's going to translate to the NFL level. You're a Lions fan. Like, TJ Hockenson went 8th overall, was, you know, a great pick. He's turned out great for a different team, you know, not for the Detroit Lions. So it's just tough. I think he will go, though. Like, I would imagine it starts around like New Orleans at 14 to me, I think is where it gets very interesting. Colts probably not at 15, but like, you know, the Bengals sit there at 18. Somewhere in that 14 to 18 range, I think, is where he goes.
I mocked him to the Bengals in my post-combine mock draft. There you go. Cool. Well, while we have you here, Brad, and we are going to get you going here soon, any draft favorites you want to pound the table for real quick?
Yeah, so, and I'm talking like deeper cuts here, you know, guys that I just fall in love with. Cade Stover is this year's guy that I just think, like, you take Cade Stover, who's the Ohio State tight end, take him in the fourth round, I don't know, probably around there, early fourth, maybe late third. He is probably the better inline blockers in the class. And then, look, he's not a great athlete, but you get him in space, he can rumble, stumble, bumble. He's got really good hands. I think he's a good hands catcher, catches the ball away from his body, can catch in traffic, avoid contact. And just like, to me, it's just like the floor is so high. And then there was a story that came out yesterday or earlier this week that he strengthens his hands by massaging cows. I think is what the article. And look, like, come on, like that's, you know, that's just, that raises him like 10 spots on my, I don't have a big board, but if I did, you know, that would raise him a bunch. So he's one for me. And then I'll say, this is kind of a more of a known name, but I love Troy Fatanu, and everyone does now. I think he's one of the biggest winners of the combine, but whether it's guard or tackle, I don't care. I mean, he has some run blocking on tape throughout the course of the season that is so much fun. He's such a good lateral athlete. His footwork is so clean. So that's not like a, you know, I would just say, like, taking him top 20 to me wouldn't bother me. Like, I remember early on in the draft season, before the combine, everything, it was like he was a fringe first rounder. He would go like 29th to 30. I'm taking that guy top 20 if I'm a team.
Yeah, I finished his evaluation, a week after the Super Bowl, and he's had a first round grade for me since then. So I think he's awesome. Stover's a great name, though, because this class at tight end is not very good. I mean, that's not a secret. So, you know, Bowers is the clear favorite. Then there's really not a second guy that everyone's in love with. You'll hear some people talk Benson, some people talk Stover, Jatavion Sanders, whatever. So for you to invoke Stover's name, I think is cool. This is, you know, we are on the Fantasy Points Podcast Network here, so most of our listeners are fantasy guys. So they'll love to hear that. The strengthening the hands thing by massaging cows is awesome. That just reminds me of something Dan Campbell would be into. You know, bring some grit, grit to the team. So I got Jake Ferguson vibes when I watched him, Cowboys tight end.
Very
similar, not like exceptional athletes, but they do all the tight end centric stuff really, really well. I do think he is a high floor guy for sure.
I like that comp for sure, because I remember him at the Senior Bowl. Like, again, like, he's not a guy that's gonna like break away, but such a good hands catcher, like late hands, like smart over the middle. And he's obviously, you know, been great in Dallas, but yeah, I think it's a good comp.
Awesome. Well, Brad, thank you so much for joining the show again. This is year two of you being on here. For those listening, you can find Brad at @PFF_Brad on X. Please check out his work. He's the man. Brad, thank you so much.
Of course, thanks for having me.